Welcome to the Brainy Gamer Podcast, episode 21, for March 7th, 2009. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Michael, and I'm happy to have you with me as always. This edition of the podcast features an interview with Kelly Santiago and Genova Chen, co-founders of That Game Company and creators of Flower, a game I've written about on my blog. A lot of you have written about it, too, or read about it, or played it, or wanted to play it. It's sort of the game of note recently. It's kind of that focal point game that we sometimes identify in the blogosphere or among game journalists who write about games. We've been kind of paying attention to this game, and I think it's been a fascinating conversation, partly because I think a lot of us have tried to describe our experience playing Flower, and it's sort of forced us to, I don't know, kind of evaluate the language we use to talk about games, because the game sort of provokes you to respond in ways that games don't typically provoke us, I think. At least for me, that was the case. And no, I made no secret about the fact that I really admire the game. It sort of meant a lot to me, and I found it very moving, and I also, I don't know, identified with it in a certain kind of way that I think others felt too. And, you know, not everybody likes it as much as I do. And I think really that's been the most interesting part of the conversation regarding Flower is, you know, sort of stepping back and examining why it is that some of us find the game particularly moving or even profound, and others find it less so, and why that is and where those differences emerge. And really, I think when you get down to it, part of the conversation is about a kind of a design philosophy. You know, what are games meant to do? How are we meant to experience games? And what do you do with a game that's built like Flower? And so it just occurred to me that it would be interesting to talk to the people who made the game and get their take on it. So that's what I did. And both of them were gracious enough to say yes and spent time with me yesterday talking about the game. So thanks to them, and I really look forward to bringing that to you. Before I do, there are a couple things I just wanted to mention briefly. The first being the departure of N. Guy Kroll from Newsweek. A lot of people have written really wonderful kind of fond farewells to N. Guy, sort of as if he's disappearing from the face of the earth. And of course he's not. And, you know, he's described where he's headed, and he's going to be a game design consultant, and he's going to continue to write about games, and his presence, I think, will still very much be felt among those of us who are interested in games. But, you know, clearly, he is the guy who, at least in this country, has kind of stood at the center of the conversation about games that a lot of us are interested in. He's been doing it for, 3 years, which isn't really very long when you think about it, but the kind of explosive growth of games journalism, games criticism, the blogosphere surrounding games and writing about games, I think it's fair to say that N. Guy's been kind of sitting at the head of that table for some time. And, you know, when I think about N. Guy, I sort of picture this big, long table that we've all been sitting at, having this terrific conversation while we consume these games together as our sort of, you know, meal. And he's kind of sitting at the head of that table, facilitating conversation, pointing at things that I think many of us have found interesting, and, you know, just generally in a kind of gracious, warm, and often pioneering sort of way. I think he's provided a model for how to write about games and how to talk about games that has been very useful. You know, part of that, quite frankly, is he's just a damn good writer. I mean, this guy knows how to write. And I'm not suggesting that there isn't any good game writing out there, because there's plenty of it. But I think that he kind of raised the bar, given that he became a notable figure and a lot of people read his work. And if that's the way this guy's going about his business, I think it points the way for others of us who, you know, want to sort of match that and aspire to that and think hard about games and write clearly and thoughtfully about games. N. Guy has been pointing the way for quite some time. You know, the other thing I want to mention about N. Guy, and this is just on a purely personal level, shortly after I started my blog, he reached out to me. You know, he sort of pointed to my blog and a couple of links that he made to me, and he agreed to an interview, you know, sort of at a time when pretty much nobody knew who I was. And, you know, he's just been so kind to me in helping me find my voice and identify an audience and pursue certain topics I was interested in pursuing. And, you know, he just couldn't have been more supportive. He couldn't have been more friendly. And I don't know. I just sometimes, I think a lot of us are in this boat. A lot of people who listen to this podcast, a lot of people who are part of the Gamers Confab, who've appeared on this podcast. You know, many of us owe a lot to Engai for shining his big, bright Newsweek level up searchlight on us and our work. So, Engai, farewell and best of luck. I know that we'll be hearing again from you soon. We'll miss you at Level Up, but we can't wait to see what you do next. Just a quick word about the Gamers Confab. I promised in my last podcast, which was sort of a solo effort, that I would reassemble the Confab for this podcast. But when I was able to get Genova and Kelly on to talk about Flower, and we talked about it, you know, for a fair amount of time, it seemed to me that it would be too much to pack another segment onto the podcast. And if I'm completely honest, I also have to say that my vacation begins today and spring break for me. And so my family's headed out of town tomorrow, and I just ran out of time to be able to assemble a confab for this time. So I absolutely swear to God I'm going to get the confab together next time. It's going to be a stupendous, great, awesome, be-all, end-all confab. I swear it's going to happen, and I look forward to putting the team back together, at least, you know, part of the team, and bringing that segment to you again. Of course, the big event on the calendar for me after we get back from vacation is the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco, which I'll be headed to the week after next. That's a huge event for me. I guess it's a huge event for everybody, for the industry, for games journalism. It's turned into, you know, quite a thing. But it, you know, it's only the second time I've gone, and I've talked about it before, what that event meant to me last year and how much I learned. And I just can't wait to go this time. And my plan, of course, is to cover the event for the blog, and I'm sure I'll generate quite a few pieces based on sessions that I attend, people I talk to. But if I can swing it, I'm bringing a recording system with me, and I'm going to try to talk to people if I can manage it. I tried this last year, had this cool little device with me, sort of ready to go, and I was sort of stupid to say, but I was, you know, sort of too shy to actually ask anybody to talk to me. I was, you know, sort of wandering around and kind of, you know, Google-eyed, and I loved what I was seeing, and I was, you know, writing a lot of stuff down and posting to the blog, and I just kept thinking, well, one of these times, maybe by the end, I'll sort of, you know, draw up the courage to whip this device out and, you know, shove it in somebody's face and say, talk. But it didn't happen. And now I feel like maybe I know a few more people. I've corresponded with some people that I'd love to talk to, and they sort of know who I am. So maybe I'll feel a little bit more courageous about making a few recordings and chatting with a few people that I think you might find interesting. So that's the plan anyway. More on that soon. I hope you enjoy the interview with Kelly Santiago and Genova Chen. If you haven't played Flower, you should definitely play that game. Definitely play that game. I think I finished my, I don't know, 10th playthrough of that game the other day. And I don't know, I think I might play it again tonight. So enjoy Flower if you haven't tried it. And if you don't own a PS3, go knock on somebody's door who does have one and you know, tell them you'll pay them $5 to let you play Flower on the machine. It's well worth it. So hope you enjoy the interview. And away we go. I am very happy to welcome Kelly Santiago and Genova Chen. They are the producer and creative director, respectively, for Flower. A game that I have written a lot about on my blog, and pretty rapturously, I guess. And so I'm very, very grateful to them for joining me. Delighted to have both of you here, and welcome to the Brainy Gamer podcast.
Thanks a lot for having us.
Hi, everyone.
Oh, it's our pleasure. I have so much I want to talk to you about, but I thought it might be interesting to begin sort of at the beginning with the two of you having come together at USC, and I'm just curious to know how you met and how you decided that you wanted to work with each other.
Yeah, we're just giving a glance, seeing who's going to answer that one. So we met at the USC Interactive Media Division. We were both in the second incoming class, and it's a small program. I mean, there were 9 people in our class, so we got to work together a lot, but it wasn't until the student game Cloud where we really were working such long hours together that we realized that, hey, you know, we have similar goals for what we want to do and ambition, and we can work together and not kill each other, and those are good things.
Did you know early on that you would be able to collaborate with each other? I mean, beyond just business stuff. I mean, did you have a sense that you were sort of pointed in the same direction aesthetically, artistically, design-wise?
It definitely happened over the course of the 3 years at the program. I mean, when I came into USC, I was coming from theater, and Genova was coming from more from games, but also animation. And it was at USC that we both started focusing our energy more towards on video game design specifically.
Yeah, so, I would add that, so that I think it's really the education we get from the school, you know, the people we met, the professor and the talks we see kind of opens up this vision for us, and we actually share the vision.
So do you have someone that you would sort of call your mentor, or a group of people that you sort of point to from USC who really made a difference for you?
I would say it's the whole school of cinematic arts. You know, it's the classes we taken, you know, at the first year we have like film class, you know, screenwriting class, animation class, which doesn't really have anything to do with interactive, you know, media, but the class we took there actually have a great impact on the view we have towards the industry. And then, you know, our video game professor, Tracy Fullerton and Chris Swan, you know, they have a very academic, you know, like views about video games. And we actually have critical studies class about games, which is quite interesting. And then every week, our school will invite someone who's very intelligent, you know, from the field, you know, the either from Microsoft, from game company, from art, you know, installation background. Just these people come in and they talk, really just help to open up our view.
Am I understanding it correctly? Because I only know a little bit about the interactive media program there, but they mm-hmm. but they do seem to have this kind of embrace of the arts. Broadly defined, it's not just about coding games. It's about understanding, you know, games situated in the larger context of design and the arts. Is that a proper understanding?
The interactive media program started on 2002, and you know, interactive media is a much larger definition than what video game is. Video game is more like part of it. It's kind of like saying film is part of motion graphics. You know, mm-hmm. And I think a lot of energy of the school has been put in like virtual reality, mobile technology, internet, and, you know, other things. But game is just like one of the potential track that students can pick. I think it was 2004 or 2005. Electronic Arts had a big donation to the school. So the video game branch become much more strong now that people almost forget that the program is about interactive media rather than video games. Because a lot of kids who heard the donation come to the school, you know, think about the school as the video game program. But I think what is important is that video game is part of this medium, and this medium is so new and it's filled with possibilities.
Yeah, and it's changing so much and will change over the next few years and decades, certainly. So it's good to have a broad view of it.
Well, now I just want to make it clear that I did not know Kelly was from the theater before I had her on. I just discovered this at this moment. So tell me about, do you see any sort of connection between your interest in theater and sort of how you came to games from that background?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me personally, I've always been attracted to the fringe and experimental art and new art. And what brought me from theater to interactive media was that when I was working, I was working in New York and just worked a lot on like original theater, experimental theater, because I just liked, always found myself attracted to just creating something new from scratch. And I found a lot of that going towards new media and digital media and having interactive media elements to it. And I would be the like de facto person in charge of that, just because I think I grew up with software engineers, so I wasn't afraid of doing it, but it's not that I knew a lot about it. So I decided to say, see, okay, maybe I'll focus on this as my career. That's what took me to the USC Interactive Media Division. And then, as Genova was saying earlier, getting this new perspective on video games, I had grown up with them and played them all my life. I was definitely a gamer growing up. I had never thought about making them, but it was that same feeling of, wow, here's this new medium with such untapped potential. There's so much to do. And I think my sort of curiosity and interest in doing like things that haven't been done before definitely drew me towards video games.
Yeah. I promise we're going to talk about Flower in a second, but I'm curious about your background. I mean, you started the company in 2006, and you very shortly after USC. I mean, does it sometimes feel like you're on a rocket, just, you know, sort of hanging on? It seems like things have happened so fast and have gotten so big so quickly for you. I just wonder how you respond to that and whether you expected that or whether you sort of were geared up for that.
Well, so I think outside there's a lot of, you know, people wrote about that game company and they say, oh, Sony picked us up at the end of our graduation. But it's not really like that. It's more like we actually actively going out trying to find a possibility and opportunity for us to make games that we wanted to make. It's basically all started in this school project, which is called Cloud. We made it as a grant project. It's called a Game Innovation Grant, which is like the only requirement is that you want to create a game that is completely different from what's out there in the market. I don't know if you have played that game or heard of that game.
Yes, I did. In fact, I think I played it probably the week you guys put it on the internet.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I remember it very well, in fact.
Yeah, so when we make that game, at the time, you know, for me, it's more about just kind of trying to do things that's the opposite of what GTA is. Because that was the year when GTA San Andreas was getting hit by the mainstream media. And I really wanted to see if it's possible to create a game that's the opposite of what that is, but then to see whether it's still enjoyable. So when we put the game out, we really have no idea, you know, whether the game is gonna, hit the player's, you know, emotional core or not. But surprisingly, we have basically overwhelming response for a student project, you know, and it's really badly made in today's standards, you know, it's really bad usabilities and everything. But we got these emails from, you know, like just gamers and non-gamers, you know, people who are in their 50s write email to thank us for making the game. And we were just like, you know, it seems this kind of game really hit a completely different demographics. You know, maybe some gamers, but a lot of people who don't play games will actually come to this site and download this 40-meg game, and they will feel really emotional about it. And that really kind of opens, you know, our eyes to let us see there's this huge continent, you know, out there that people haven't tapped into, and we really believe in that these games that evoke different feelings can you know, appeal to a different demographic. And also at the same time, a lot of hardcore gamers who want to try something new would embrace this kind of game. Mm-hmm. And we had very strong confidence in game like Cloud. So we kind of, at the end of our graduation, of course, we have choices of go to work for the big companies. We also feel like, you know, we really want to see this game to be on a commercial platform so more people would know that, hey, game can do something different too, you know, rather than everybody's bashing how violent video game is and how it's influencing our kids, which is not really true anyways. But I just really want to show the public that games could be something else. So we kind of looked around, you know, the potential job possibilities, you know, the potential studio we can work for. We just can't find anyone who's doing games like Cloud. So Kelly and I was talking, you know, like we should really pitch this game to the publisher and trying to, you know, get someone sponsor us to make the game. It's interesting because without being going to school and taking the class there, we wouldn't believe we can do something like that. You know, two students just come out of college. Hmm. How could you start a game company to do all this game with no money, right? Hmm. But a bunch of student loans. But we had a business of interactive media class, which was taught by Bing Gordon, who's the ex-chief creative officer from EA. You know, he really kind of showed us, you know, the legal problem, the financial issues, you know, how you're supposed to prepare a pitch and, you know, who you contact. Basically, we actually did a drill in the class, which we pitched a fictional project to a bunch of industry professionals. And so it actually propelled us, you know, so we were like, you know, maybe we can just do this in the real life now. So we prepared a pitch, a very ballsy pitch, is that the word? And, you know, we know nothing about the industry. We just have a lot of love in our game, and we hope a lot of, you know, like positive feelings that we want to help the industry. So we go around and we pitch to all kinds of publishers, basically any publisher we can get, you know, all the publishers in North America except Microsoft. For some reason, we can't reach them. I think at that time, it was really lucky for us because it's when Sony and Nintendo are launching their new consoles with digital distribution. We have no idea that that is happening. We were just like talking to different publishers. Most publishers who are used to do the retail games, like, you know, they just feel like, well, this idea is cool, but we've never seen any games like this. We don't know how to market it. And others will say, you know, you guys, this budget is too risky, or blah, blah, blah. Or you just come out of school, you have no experience. So, yeah, a lot of bummers. But it was Sony and Nintendo in the end, you know, they were like, hey, we have this new digital distribution platform, which, you know, it can allow low budget projects. But then, and also at the time, they are dying for new content, you know, because their new platform just announced there's not that many developers for this platform.
Right.
So, you know, while we were pitching Cloud, you know, like to all the publishers and, you know, keep getting no's, we kind of sit down and ask to ourselves, you know, is Cloud too much of a too big of a game that we can handle? And it was more like an accident that when I was pitching to Sony, I said, oh, by the way, I have this new thesis project, you know, working on called Flow, and I just put it out, you know, a couple weeks ago and got lots of you know, hits on the website. At the time, we were talking to John Hyde, who was the basically director for PSN, and he played the game, and he said, well, you know, this game is actually pretty good, and why don't we start our a project like Flow at the scale of Flow so you guys can actually get it done by the time PS3 launches, and then we can talk about Cloud later. that's kind of like how we started the company. You know, we really didn't expect to get a deal and to start up a company when we graduate, but then this magical thing just happened. You know, it's quite a ride.
I can only imagine. I mean, and I think this interesting sort of convergence between you, your interest in this core games, as you call them, and you know, leaving the program at the time you did, at the time that these, you know, downloadable, you know, media is just kind of taking off. I mean, it really does seem like a kind of beautiful serendipity in a certain way, as well as, you know, all the other good stuff that you guys have brought to it yourselves.
Yeah, yeah. And I think coming with or finding the people that we did at Sony Santa Monica is also a really important part of that magic equation, because they just really not only were supportive of digital distribution, but kind of what they wanted to do with it and the sort of different kinds of games they wanted to put there. And now it's easy to, like, I think like, of course, oh, they were digital distribution and Flow was such a good match. But just reiterating what Genova was saying earlier, it was hard. It was a hard sell when we were doing it.
Yeah. I'm just imagining, you know, you sort of showing it to them. I mean, I'm just, based on, you know, kind of what they would have known at the time and the kinds of games people were playing, and there must have been at least somebody in the room that was shaking their head like, huh? Like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also, as Jennifer was saying, our pitch, I mean, the actual what kind of game we were going to make was just one third of this pitch that it involved, that opened up with a huge section on our vision for games and how we were going to change the industry and like where we wanted it to go. So when I look back on that, I just think, yeah, we were pretty ballsy. But that's what led to this three game deal and the relationship we have with Sony Santa Monica, because they were actually like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Let's do it.
There seem to be certain things about a kind of a through line, if you will, through the design of your games, a kind of an embrace of nature, a kind of a melding of music and gameplay, a sense of them being very tactile in a certain way. There's a certain kind of beautiful kineticism that they have, that there's, you know, in other words, you know, you sort of have a signature as a developer that is recognizable. I presume that's all very intentional.
Yeah, well, that's great to hear. I mean, you touched on a lot of things. One is the I guess tactile feeling, and I think for me all of it is connected by this idea of accessibility, and what Genova's creative vision for the company has been is this creating games that can appeal to anyone, no matter where you're from or if you're male or female. And I think that leads to a lot of what you touched on there as far as visceral feeling and this sense of beauty that anyone can relate to. I don't know if you want to touch on it more generally.
Yeah. Well, basically, I wouldn't say this is a, you know, our great idea. It's more of a restriction that come from myself, because first of all, I didn't grow up in the America, right? So I can't really do cowboy stuff or football. You know, I've never seen football. I can't do Madden game. You know, and I'm not from Japan. I'm from China. So I don't know what Japanese want for consoles. So when it comes to making games, I have very limited choices. You know, like, I can only do things that I know on a genuine level that all humans share. You know, like the love of freedom, the love of nature, right? the sense of flight, which everybody shares. So it actually really narrows down the things I can make. But because we are a small studio, and the constraint is actually a very good thing for us. You know, it helps to narrow and to make the direction of the game more consistent. We just simply can't do a bunch of dialogues with a bunch of casting of actors and actresses. So when the choice is limited, your product is actually going to be more of a singular voice.
I presume that you're heading towards the next project and you're working on something post Flower. And I'm just wondering how, because Flower's been very successful and people know about it, and, you know, I presume everyone wants to the next thing to be bigger and better or whatever. Do you feel a certain pressure to not get bigger? That you, I mean, there's a certain way that you go about your business that is kind of inherently small and kind of tight knit, and that you don't want to get any bigger?
The pressure is sitting next to me. Well, it's basically, you know, first of all, I think, you know, when you have a AAA budget, you know, there's a financial pressure that you just can't screw up, right? Once you screw up, hundreds of people in the team will lose their job. It's just, you know, not a good situation to try to innovate and to break the boundary of what game is. Secondly, you know, I think the team right now we have is very small. The core team we have here is only 7 people. It's just a business practice. You just can't turn into 100 people within, you know, a couple of years. That's just wrong. It's wrong business practice. Yeah. So we have all these different limits here. And I think limitation is really good because, you know, when you have $20 million and you just, all right, $20 million, how are we going to spend it? Well, a lot of people do 3D motion capture characters. Well, that's $10 million right there. Let's just use that, right? Mm-hmm. It just, I feel having, you know, a limited budget and you can only pick a very few elements to try, and you will be very cautious of not doing something. We were like, oh, you know, we were thinking, well, should we go realism or should we go more abstract? You know, because realistic graphics has been what the majority of game companies has been focusing on. And there's no way we can outdo them with a 7-people team, mm-hmm. right? So the only choice for you is to pick a unique and different style that, you know, nobody else is doing, and then you can be the best in that field. And being a small company, you have to be like that in a lot of areas, not just the visual, but the sound, the gameplay, the story. I think that's actually very helpful for creativities. Mm. And having someone constantly telling me, no, you can't do it because this and that is actually what make the game unique.
Oh, wait, but just for your listeners, we do have 2 job positions open right now. You can check out our website for more information.
Very cool. You guys are based in LA, right?
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm kind of tired of being a professor. Maybe you guys could use somebody who could, you know, put words together over in your place.
There you go. Send us your application.
Okay. I'm curious, the transition that you made from flow to flower, which was obviously part of that big transition, is going into a 3D world, and then not just 3D, but also, you know, taking into consideration flight and a whole different way of sort of teaching the player how to use that 6-axis controller, which most of us aren't used to. All of those considerations. Did you, when you thought about Flower, did you know right away that it would be 3D? And did you have certain design goals about how you wanted to kind of transition that flow experience into Flower? That you wanted to change it or make it?
I don't think we create game in that kind of you know, mental state. We create games at that game company. We always start with an emotional experience that we want to deliver. So there was no connection between Flow and Flower at all. If there's any connection, it's just happened to be, well, it's made by the same guys. We started Flower with a couple of images and concept art, and a feeling and a music track that we asked people to make. We wanted to deliver this experience of a very safe and home-like environment. It's accessible through a portal in your living room, which is called PS3. It's kind of, you open up your PS3, you enter a backyard in the virtual space, which you can go feel safe and warm and to be embraced by nature and to relax. In the concept art, there was a field of flowers and a flower in the foreground and a house, little wooden house in the distance, and a city near the horizon. I put them together because I just feel like it's that space that I want to be. There's nothing mentioned about why we have to do this thing because we did flow, so we should put in a motion control here, or to put like a snake-like creature here. There's no connection there. It's more like, well, as we are trying to figure out what the game is, you know, now that we have experience we want to deliver, a lot of things come together, you know, the same way as what happened to flow.
Flower for me communicates this really kind of extraordinary sense of longing that from the very first moment you just sort of connect with this idea that there's something about the world that's bigger than you and that's more beautiful than what you know, and if you're willing to go look for it, you might find it, and it might be a little risky and it might be a little dangerous, but it's worth doing. And I mean, all of this without dialogue, without characters, without any formal narrative, really experienced through purely through this kind of lovely gameplay. I'm curious, how did you, or were there games that you played that sort of suggested to you that that kind of communication was possible? Did this just come sort of from within you? I'm just curious about how you were able to build that way of communicating through a game.
Well, the Flower Project is very much experimental, because it's more like an experiment on how to direct in a game. We have learned a lot of things about visual communications and story structures in screenwriting during this film school studies. And I particularly wanted to try to deliver an emotional arc, a narrative structure of an emotional rise, you know, like, and well, it's high and lows. Because I believe that to create a cathartic, you know, emotional impact, it does not have to rely on dialogues or plots. I was actually heavily influenced by a short animation I saw on 2004 Seagraph. It's the winner of their digital animation award called the Cathedral. It was done by this Polish artist all by himself. It doesn't have any plot. It's very simple. It's like a pilgrim on his way to a church, and he sacrificed in the church. That's very simple. That's what happened. But it delivers this such a strong impact in me that I feel like emotionally, I was washed, flushed by this film. And I start to question myself, what is this film about? And I start to question about what my life is about. I just really wanted to deliver that that emotional cathartic experience in an interactive environment. So the game is designed with this emotional curve. You know, there's a twist in the middle, and then it goes down and goes high to reach a climax, and there's a relax. It's very much like how you would design for music, design for a movie plot. And I think it could be a very good use of direction for video games too. And then the second thing comes into directing is that once you have this narrative emotional structures, you have to use all elements to support that direction. What's new about game is that beyond the use of sound and visual, there's interactions. In the school, when we were studying film, and the professor told us, you know, you really need to align all the visual elements, you know, using the contrast and harmony to create this curve to kind of a match with your emotional goal to deliver that strong impact, you know. And so for Flower, it's very much the challenge about how to design the gameplay to fit with the emotional goal to deliver this feeling. And I learned it from class in a theoretical way, but I have never practiced it in the game. So for Flower, it's very much like experiment to see whether the player would be touched with these emotional rides. I guess the result was not bad. We've heard a lot of people writing email to us saying they're sobbing or they have tears in their eyes. I guess it was a successful experiment.
It truly was. There's this crazy kind of arc. You speaking of arc, there's this crazy kind of arc, I think, in game reviews and game criticism and the ways games go. And there's this initial kind of overwhelming positive response. And you just know that there's a backlash coming inevitably. Every game, no matter how good it is, gets the backlash. And I sort of started to feel like a little embarrassed after a while when I was admitting online that, you know, I did. Flower made me cry it twice in the game. It seems like we're awfully cynical in the game space, you know, and that Flower, it's so beautiful. It's so gentle in a way that we can sort of wrap our arms around it. But then for some reason, we sort of have to like kick it too. And it's troubling to me in a certain way. But I think, well, I'm gratified to know that you've had people tell you in very free ways that they've been moved by the game, because I think it is a very moving experience, honestly.
Yeah, I don't know. When we first met Cloud, there were people who was moved in tears, and it was, you know, at the time I cannot understand why would you cry for a game like this. But I think it was those emails that really kind of, you know, give me this very positive reinforcement to work harder to actually touch people once again. Mm-hmm. And having Flower really affecting a lot of people, it just puts a lot more pressure on me that, you know, you need to do a better job next time, otherwise they will be disappointed.
Well, I wonder too if some of the reaction, that kind of reaction, comes from within the game, which is just people like me who've been playing games forever. I mean, since I was very young, and that's a long time ago. Part of my emotional response to Flower purely has to do with the fact that it proves to me something about video games that I've always wanted to be true, and that mm-hmm. hasn't, for the most part, been true.
I think there is just one big difference. I mean, I might be over-exaggerating, but I think I used to be touched by games when I was a kid, but mainly for the plot, you know, for the characters. Mm-hmm. And that portion of the game that touched me is actually in a traditional medium form, which is like film or literature or novel. And I really think that it is possible to touch people through interactions. I don't know how much the touchness of Flower is interaction, but I was, you know, we spent a lot of time trying to figure out the gameplay for Flower. To tell the truth, that we have like changed the gameplay for like at least 15 times. At the very beginning, we're like, all right, so this game has to be fun, right? We need to put in some time limit. There's going to be multiple actions you can execute. Maybe there's spells you can cast. This is a survival game. You would die very often. And we tried all those gameplay, actually. Some of them are pretty fun. But we want to stay true to that experience we want to deliver, which is a very home and warm and safe experience, you know, relaxing and filled with love. And dying there is just, you know, even though it's fun, but it just breaks that experience. And the time limits, it just induced all this stress. It's not true to the vision. And so we just constantly looking, and we change the gameplay until the end. And if you look at the gameplay, this is just Snake in 3D space, right? You just hit things and things happen. You would say like, this is the most primal game interactions. But I think that interaction combined with interactive soundtrack and music and the visuals, it is that thing that can deliver that feeling the best. So I'm actually pretty proud of that gameplay, even though it is just like flow, but you can fly on the Z-axis this time.
Right.
And I think a lot of time when developers trying to create gameplays, they were kind of somehow diluted by this thing called fun. You know, like we call, game has to be fun. But fun is this word that kind of summarize a lot of feelings like thrill, excitement, empowerment, you know, addictions, which is kind of like what the game used to be in the past. But I think video game is an interactive medium, and gameplay, the interaction design, is a new dimension in this you know, kind of mixed media, right? And I think just like Painter, who designed an emotional experience, who delivered emotional experience through color palette and compositions, a musician who delivered emotional experience through the notes and the rhythm and melodies, the game designer who is designing the interactions for the users, they need to be able to deliver emotions through interactions too. But unfortunately, when designers focus on delivering these experiences, they always said, oh, this interaction has to be fun and addictive. That kind of just limits the possibility of this medium. You know, have you seen a film director saying, all right, this visual has to be addictive here, you know? Well, there might be some, you know, this visual has to be very exciting, very stimulating. You know, you see something like that in the Hollywood blockbuster action movies. But a lot of time, what that experience needs to be is very subtle. Like for the case of Flower, we wanted to have a very relaxing, very easygoing feeling, which is kind of against the traditional, you know, discipline of a game designer. And we knew it. And we went on the traditional way. We know that what fun is, and we tried. But it didn't work with the vision. It didn't work with the experience. And I think you just need to have the boss to say, no, the old way didn't work this time. We need to find a new way.
How did you find the balance? You could have put even less gameplay in Flower, mm-hmm. I suppose, if you'd wanted. How did you know when a certain amount of gameplay was enough? Like, for example, opening up an area by completing a certain number of tasks.
Well, yes. I would say because we are making a commercial game, we know it would be ridiculous to try the complete opposite. And when people can't recognize it as a game, they are probably not even going to try it. And I think I was on 2006 GDC. I was on a panel talking with a group of independent game makers. And we were talking about a game as art. And some of them are saying that, you know, art is about self-expression. You shouldn't be considered the market, what the market likes, and then making your art. You know, you should stay true to yourself, to what you like, which I can appreciate a lot. But I said what at the time is that there are two kinds of artists. You know, the artist who focuses on expressing their feelings, and the artist who wants to educate the people out there so that they can appreciate art. And I think we are very much the later one. We want to make things that the conventional gamer can feel comfortable to try, but somehow realizing that, you know, it is possible to have an artistic value. So once they played Flower, they will probably be able to, you know, pick up other artistic games that they would never, ever thought about playing. I really think that would, you know, we want to do whatever is the best for the medium. We want to have more people to enjoy games and appreciate games. So I think, at least what we believe that would be the best for the industry is to create games on conventional venue like consoles, mm-hmm. and make a game that is artistic but at the same time still familiar to the gamer, so they can try it and then they can see the difference there, mm-hmm. and also they can then show, you know, their friends, their family who's in the same household but don't never touch their console, there's something enjoyable and interactive that is out there. Mm-hmm. If this game is a complete open world, a simulation of a garden or some kind, then you will lose your incentive to complete or to experience through the journey. And curiosity is the drive for our design. We want to design an environment where we just lure people in there rather than say, hey, there's mission objective to go to point B and there's something on your radar point says go here. We want it to feel more like it's the gamer who come up that goal to want to go there and they do it.
Do you have a strong feeling about the hardware that you're designing your games for? I mean, how much does that matter to you?
Since we know that we're in this exclusive deal with PlayStation Network, it's a unique position when you're starting out on a project. You know exactly the hardware that your players are going to be using and what we're going to be developing on the entire time. And I think that's one of the technical lessons you can see that we learned from Flow to Flower, learning a lot more about the PlayStation 3 and knowing that we're starting on that platform. I mean, the whole graph system is something that utilizes the SBUs or the PS3 specifically, for instance.
Yeah.
And that's just not something we could do in that same way.
Yeah.
So it definitely fed into the design of the experience.
I'm also curious about the music, and I'm wondering, you were talking about you tried all kinds of different gameplay systems and different mechanics or whatever you would throw in there to see how they might work. Did you try different kinds of music as well? And if so, did you consider other sorts of styles of music instead of what you've got? I mean, not that what you have is bad. I love what you've got, but just curious, like, were you ever doing like headbanging Flower or anything like that?
Nothing that drastic. I mean, definitely the audio system was something that we knew from the very beginning that we wanted this feeling of this imaginary environment in which there's sound all around you and the flowers and the environment itself is evoking the sound. And the system of the sort of interactive soundtrack to it was an idea that we had from the very beginning. And the tone for it, as Genova was saying, was very much set by the emotional goal for the experience and what we're going after. And we did audition a number of composers, and each one brings their own style to the table. And so then it was just finding which composer just what their personal style, which one we felt fit with this. And it turned out to be Vincent Diamante, who actually composed Cloud for anyone who's familiar with that as well.
Yeah, so interestingly, when we auditing the composers, there were some award-winning composers and a lot more skillful composers. Vincent is more like, he's not a full-time composer and he's teaching in the school. And it just happened to be that his style has this very innocent, childish feeling in there. And I really enjoy that feeling rather than the quality or the structures of the compositions. And so we picked him. And at the time, we were saying that he sounds more indie to me. So we went with him. You know, if we would be making the AAA budget, we probably never would hire him. We would hire some big orchestra, music there. Yeah, it's just what's best for that experience, for that thing we want to deliver.
Right. I've kept you longer than I promised I would, so I'll just wrap up here. And if you don't mind, could I ask you just one more quick question?
Oh, no problem.
Sure.
Well, I promised that I would mention this because I told some friends I was going to be talking to, and Kel, you know all about this. We had a cast party after my production closed last week, and I had a bunch of people in my house, and a lot of them aren't gamers. And so I put Flower on the screen, PS3 was up and running, and I just handed the controller to somebody, and I said, hey, give this a try. And of course, as you might expect, everything came to a stop and everyone sort of starts wandering into the room. And, pretty soon everyone's watching this person play Flower, and then they start handing the controller around. And it struck me that I was watching something that I hadn't watched before, which is a bunch of people discovering that video games are actually not what they thought they were. And really a kind of a significant, powerful refutation of what they thought they were. And I guess I'm just curious from your perspective, has that been part of the, for lack of a better word, victory of Flower for you? If so, or do you see it another way? Am I seeing it in a way that maybe is different than you see it?
No, I mean, I think that's definitely one win state for us. I've seen it. Actually, I was just recently at a party with a group of friends as well and had a similar experience. And what I've seen is that, especially with people who... this is most people, I think, who used to play video games and then just fell out, either just growing up and they don't have time, or they became too complicated or whatever. And they don't realize just how far we've come in the last few decades and what the real, we've come to this moment, that I think the game designers before us prophesized of this moment of really being able to use the technology and where it's at, and using all of it together to create these very powerful experiences that we just haven't seen before.
Well, I want to thank both of you very much for joining me and for spending time with me talking about that game company and Flower and your work in general. Hats off to you and congratulations on your success with the game.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. And any hints at all about the next game? Even like a little tidbit?
We don't even know yet.
Okay. Well, yeah. Maybe you should rest for a while before jumping into the next one.
So. Well, you know, it will definitely be very unique.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, best wishes to both of you. And thanks again for speaking with me. And happy gaming.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
When sundown pales the sky, I want to hide a while behind your smile, and everywhere I'd look, your eyes I'd find. For me to love you now would be the sweetest thing. 'Twould make me sing, but I may as well try and catch the wind. Tears, I want you near to kill my fears, to help me to leave all my